Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Friday to you. Nice to have you here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We have an amazing Friday program for you, so let's get at it. 1-800-636-8686. If you know what you want to talk about, you want to hit me right now. Now, I am going to front load. I've got back-to-back interviews in hour number one. Rex Hoggard joins me. We talk U.S. Open in about 15 minutes later on this hour. In fact, right after that interview, a conversation with a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens, Hayden Hurst. In hour number two, Reed Forgrave, CBS Sports basketball reporter. In hour number three, Alvin's legendary week that was. Also, we have another smack-off profile, player profile. Today, Stevie Carbone. The smack-off is a week from today. Seven more days. Today's show, then four shows, then Friday. Where are you a week from today? Once again, 1-800-636-8686. Oh, can I have a minute? It's Friday. The flight deck's in the house. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see him.
Man, I am dangerous.
James Kelly. Did you back it in? Did you dent him up? Did you go looking for the flight deck?
Omaha!
He's in the house. Hit me up on Twitter. Hit me. Hit Hawk. Hit Alvy. Hit the flight deck. Hit Ike. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, so those are the interviews. Start off with a take or two off the very top. Let me start off by saying the Toronto Raptors are the NBA champions. That is something that has never been said on this show before, and it's being said right now. Here are a few more things that have never been said on this show. Much maligned, Kyle Lowry is an NBA champion. Mark Gasol is an NBA champion. Fred Bleeping Van Vliet is an NBA champion. And of course, Kawhi is an NBA champion. But he already was an NBA champion. And he had a finals MVP to his credit, and now he's got two. And he sure as hell earned that second one. Man, there was so much that went down last night. I don't even have time to get to all of it in one take. I'm not even sure I can cover that first quarter in a single take. That first 12 minutes had pretty much everything, starting with Kyle Lowry, who was unconscious and gave them exactly the start that they needed in a barn that was peaking for the defending champs. Here are the first three baskets of the night. Lowry layup, Lowry three, Lowry three. This guy comes out on a personal 8-0 run. And even after Golden State scored, he had another three to make that score. Lowry 11, Golden State 2. So if you were wondering how the Raptors were going to show up after that painful ending to Game 5, Mr. Toronto Raptor had your answer. Kyle Lowry put that team on his back at the start. Not only that, he took over FVV's presser.
Kyle Lowry, Toronto Raptors. Fred, how does it feel to be a world champion?
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable to have guys like Kyle Lowry on your team who step up and go for 15 in the first quarter, you know, but he should have had 50. But, you know, he slowed down, so I just want to come out there in the second half and bail him out and try to help him for his legacy. You know, they kill my man all the time in the playoffs. He gets more slander than everybody I ever seen in the league. And so to have him be able to hold that trophy up tonight, that's what means the most for us.
Yeah, I'm not sure slander is the actual word, but he's right. That guy's taking an awful lot of heat in the postseason. And he's also right when he says he could have had 50. I thought he was going to get 50. And then Lowry was joined by Pascal Siakam, who was draining threes. But because it was Game 6, Klay Thompson came up huge. Game 6 Klay. That's not just a nickname. That is a lifestyle. It's a way of life. He was keeping Golden State in that game. And then they broke out a 2-3 zone to confuse the Raptors. And if that were not confusing enough, Jamal McGlure was going viral for that shot of him standing behind the Raptors bench using a paper cup as a megaphone. And all of that was still in the first quarter. Hell, I was gassed myself after the first 12 minutes, and I was sitting in my living room on my couch. And the second quarter was just as good. Two elite teams going at each other, showing a hell of a lot of pride, and leaving it all out there. And it didn't slow down in the third quarter either. There was Clay hitting an absolutely ridiculous three to tie it at 76.
Bad pass. Siakam out of bounds, saved it. Draymond's got it up to Clay Thompson. He'll pull up and fire for three. It's good! It's good! Clay Thompson off the dribble in transition has tied the game at 76.
And then shockingly, I guess at this point, and maybe it shouldn't be shocking, but at this point, the worst possible thing that could have happened did happen. Clay Thompson went down.
Takes it down the lane, falls down, lost the ball, turnover. Here comes Curry. Curry to Thompson. Thompson to the rim, goes up. He got fouled from behind, trying to dunk it. Danny Green with the foul. Thompson's hurt.
Oh, he's hurt. His left knee. Tim, he is really hurt.
Danny Green fouled him as he flew in for a dunk. He fouled him from behind. How many more injuries must this team go through?
Oh, I just don't like the way he reacted when he was on the ground.
Man, that was horrible. That was absolutely terrible. The overhead camera that had that shot showed his reaction as he lay on the floor. It was gut-wrenching. He's helped off the court. He's headed down the tunnel, and you know he's done. I mean, you saw his reaction. You saw how awkwardly he landed. There was no way he was not done for the night. Except the next thing you know, he's turning around, and he's back out there on the floor, and he's knocking down free throws. Shooting free throws and making free throws with what turned out to be a shredded ACL. What an absolute legend. I mean, I'll get to the heart and the toughness of this Warriors team in a minute because they deserve their own take for pure toughness alone. But that was massive. That was an amazing moment, an incredible moment. Not only did he make the two free throws, he was headed back down the court to play defense. I mean, are you kidding me about that? Draymond later on said, are you kidding me about that?
But also with Clay, he would, if they would have let him stay out there, he would have stayed. That's just who he is. You see, he try to run back down the floor. Like, what are you doing? That's Clay. How many people is going to play with a hamstring injury? No one. Like, no one does that.
Like, Clay wanted to play game three with that hamstring injury. And to be honest, I was watching him last night and I was thinking to myself, how in the world is this guy moving as well as he is with a hamstring injury? In fact, he looks better to me now than he did prior to that hamstring injury. And then he goes out there and he shreds his knee and he wants to stay out there. Like he went back up the court. He's out there with a ripped ACL, but didn't want to leave the game. He told Steve Kerr he only needed a couple of minutes of rest and then he'd go back in. And yet moments later, you see him leaving the arena on crutches. I mean, what an absolute warrior in every single way possible. And this rap that the Warriors are a soft, finesse team is the biggest load of crap ever. More on that, though, a little bit later on. Meanwhile, Steve Kerr, he's got to figure out who the hell he has left. They were down KD. They were down Clay. Kerr starts the fourth quarter with Jonas Derebko, Quinn Cook, Sean Livingston, DeMarcus Cousins, and Draymond Green. And there were jokes. Lots of jokes. The Toronto Raptors were taking on the Santa Cruz Warriors. Did the Warriors have any walk-ons that they could suit up? And yet they just kept fighting and battling and grinding. Problem is, so did Toronto. FVV was hitting one soul-crushing shot after another. You can't tell me that guy's not a legend. If there's not a street in Toronto, named after him by the end of the weekend, someone's not doing their job. That dude was brass as hell. As Marc Gasol would later say, how can a guy like that even walk, given the size of his nads? Raptors took a six-point lead with under 3 minutes to go. Stop me if you've heard this before. The Warriors would not go away. Not dead. Can't quit. Steph Curry was getting triple-teamed. It was like he was back at Davidson, the way he was being defended. But Golden State still cut it to one, and then Toronto had to inbound and spin clock.
Lowry at the far hash mark. He's in the Coliseum sideline. Looking, waiting. Throws to the backcourt. Leonard has it. Chased by Iguodala. 16 seconds, 15 seconds. Leonard throws it to Danny Green. Green tied up by Draymond. Throws the ball away! It went out of bounds! He threw it away! It was intended for Siakam. It goes out of bounds. And Golden State will get the ball back with 9.6 to go.
Are you serious about that? After losing Clay, after everything they had been through, and losing like half their roster, Golden State still actually had a chance to rip this. Incredible. Again, not dead. Can't quit. They actually had a chance to rip that thing. Go ahead. Roll it.
Iguodala lobs the pass over to the far sideline. Green tracks it down to Curry for three. Misses. The ball is loose. It's picked up by Kawhi Leonard. Dribbled out near center. It's loose and on the floor.
They called a timeout. Draymond Green called a timeout. They don't have one left, so that's going to be a technical foul.
With 0.9 seconds remaining.
I mean, holy crap. That was a damn near perfect play. And it got Curry exactly the kind of look that he would have wanted. You could not ask for a better look for the guy that you wanted to shoot it. It just didn't go down. I mean, could you imagine if it had for the final shot ever in Oracle? That would have been the most Hollywood thing ever. Steph would have broke out the best shimmy ever. But it didn't go down. The ball was on the floor. The Warriors dove on it. They called timeout, a timeout that they did not have. And don't come in here with your oh-so-hilarious and not-at-all-tired Chris Webber jokes. They had to do it. Lying on the ground at midcourt, the game was over if they don't call timeout. Calling that timeout, getting that technical, actually gave them the slightest of chances of keeping that thing alive. It just didn't happen. The Raptors finished it off. Well, they finished it off after the refs put their stamp on the final few seconds with a series of reviews that really sucked all of the life out of that moment. But here's what you cannot suck the life out of. The Toronto Raptors are NBA champions. Kawhi Leonard is your finals MVP. I would say that this team buried the narrative about the Raptors, but the fact is that happened a couple of series back. This is not even the same Raptors team. It's a totally different group than the ones that came before it, than even the team they had last year. Different head coach, different starting lineup. Everything about them is different. And before I finish this, let me take a moment for Kawhi and for all you dopes who think it's really hilarious to crack on him because he's different or because you thought that he wasn't tough after that injury in San Antonio or that he faked the injury and he quit on the Spurs. If these finals have taught us anything at all, it should be never to question somebody else's toughness, ever. Like, I don't know who to blame, and I don't know what happened. I don't even know if there is any blame. And knowing how quiet both the Spurs are and how quiet Kawhi is, we're probably never going to know exactly what went down there. I don't know who got so twisted up and who owes whom an apology, but I do know this. Some of you owe that guy an apology. You all forgot how good he was. You all forgot that he was an elite player. You all forgot that he might be the best two-way player in the NBA. You only want to turn him into a bunch of jokes about his laugh and about his shoe contract. Yeah, because I'm sure that your laugh is awesome. I'm sure your kicks collection is amazing. Let me ask you this. How's that Crow Sando taste right about now? Yes, the guy is different. Different is good. It's not just good, it's awesome. I love the guy. I love his game. I love the fact that he's not like everybody else. Kawhi's different. He's unique. He's an NBA champion. He's a finals MVP. Only Kareem and LeBron have done what he just did, win it with two different teams. So don't skip to where he's going to go in free agency or anything like that. Save it for next week or the week after. Appreciate what he and the Raptors just did because they are world champions. And yes, Golden State was banged up badly, but the Raptors have nothing to apologize for and do not come running around here looking to drop an asterisk on them. I'll hit that later on. All right, you have your telephone number. It's toll free. You can find me on Twitter. You can also email me. When we come back, we'll talk some U.S. Open. Rex Hoggard joins me from Pebble. Hayden Hurst later on this hour. The sun is shining. The temperature is heating up. You know what that means? Grilling season, finally. This season, eat like the party never ends with Kingsford. Grill burgers, chicken, corn, brats, ribs, all kinds of food with that mouth-watering died and gone to heaven flavor that only Kingsford can fire up. Pick up a bag of Kingsford charcoal at your local retailer. Start something big. It's not a party if you're not eating good, and you're not eating good unless you're eating food good with Kingsford. Kingsford Charcoal. Get a bag right now at your local retailer.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
I think that you've come to expect this, right? If there's a major, I will find this guy, and he will be on the course or nearby. We're joined right now by a GolfChannel.com senior writer, Rex number 7. He is part of Golf Channel's Live from the U.S. Open news coverage on site from Pebble Beach this week. It's airing before and after live tournament coverage. You can also follow Rex on Twitter at RexHoggardGC. We are joined now by Rex Hoggard. Rex, good to have you on. How are you?
Jim, let's do a Pebble Beach plus minus here. How many times have you played Pebble versus how many times I've played Pebble? I'm pretty sure you're going to beat me on this.
Yeah, I've played Pebble no times. Never.
Oh, and I got you by one then. All right, so I'm one up on you.
You win. You're always going to be one up on me. You one up me every time you come on the show, Rex. All right, then. Let's get to it. What about the conditions? We will get to the conditions on the course today. How would you describe the course yesterday?
Soft. Very soft. I think Rory McIlroy said it best when he said this is as benign you're going to see a U.S. Open, particularly at Pebble Beach. I mean, we all know how difficult this golf course would be. And part of that's conditions. I mean, part of that is the fog came in on Wednesday and it sort of hovered on Thursday and it remains on today. And it keeps the moisture in the ground. And I think the other part is we all know what's happened at the last few U.S. Open. And the USGA needed to get this one right. And if that means they're going to give up some low scores, and if a guy's going to get to 6-7 on the par, so be it.
Rex Hoggard is joining us, and Rory said as much before the tournament. He said, quote, if they can't redeem themselves at Pebble Beach, then there could be a problem. As for the actual golf itself, Justin Rose was the first-round leader with a 6-under-65. That included birdieing the final three holes. How impressed were you with the way he played?
It was pretty amazing when you consider, number one, he was playing with Tiger Woods, and we all know what that comes with. I mean, there's an intense pressure. And then you also look, I mean, he played in the afternoon wave yesterday, and that was by far the more difficult of the two waves. These Poa greens, they get chewed up in the afternoon. The wind came up a little bit, and he proved why he's a U.S. Open player, why he's a U.S. Open champion. I mean, he did all the little things right you need to put up a score like that. And he put himself in good positions to make birdies. But I always go to the bigger deal in a situation like that is when you put yourself in a bad position, you find a way to make par, and that's what he did yesterday.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. Because you mentioned Tiger, let me follow you on that. How do you think he was feeling after his opening round 70?
There was optimism, and I think it was well-founded. I mean, the million-dollar question coming into this week is which Tiger would show up, right? The guy who looked so good at Augusta and won that 15th major, or the guy who missed the cut at the PGA Championship and clearly wasn't prepared. And everything about this week, his body language, the way he has spoken with the press, the way he prepared himself, it seemed to indicate it was closer to the guy who showed up at Augusta. And I think we saw that yesterday. He didn't have his best stuff. He put himself into some bad positions, made a big number early in his round, and he rebounded. And this is kind of what Tiger used to do, right? That, you know, even when he didn't have his best stuff, he kept himself in it. Now he's going to have to go low today, particularly when you have a guy like Justin Rose who seems to be on point, and you can't give up that much ground going into the weekend.
Rex Hoggard joining us from Pebble Beach. Rex, what about Brooks Koepka? He got off to a really nice start. He had birdies on four of his first six holes. What do you make of the way he opened his round?
I actually learned something about Brooks yesterday, and I can report this for a fact. He's not a machine. I saw him laugh. I saw him having a good time. It was shocking to me. You know, we've come to expect this sort of stoic Brooks Koepka out on the golf course. And after the round, he was actually in a good mood. He said he was very pleased with that round. And when you've done what he's done, winning four majors in the last eight Grand Slam starts, I think that gives you a perspective and a level of comfort that you really can't discount. And that's what we're seeing in Brooks right now. And we all know he loves playing with a chip on his shoulder, that he always wants to find that slight. And I find it fascinating that the slight this week is that everyone was talking about after Bethpage, Pebble Beach was going to be different. This was the kind of golf course that a mid-length guy could contend. And in his mind, I think Brooks is trying to prove the world wrong once again.
You know, things did not go as well for him after that fast start, but he still managed to come in at 2-under. You know, as you pointed out, he was in 46th after day one last year, so being in 16th was a big improvement. What is your sense as to how he deals with the pressure of majors?
It's so unique, and it's Tiger-esque, and I hate comparing anybody to Tiger because it's always patently unfair, and he's a once-in-a-generation player. But when you really look at what Brooks has been able to do in the major championships, he's able to find this sort of calm demeanor that other people don't have, and he's also able to sort of leverage what he does best against what everyone else does. He talked about it earlier this week. You know, we mentioned that the golf course USGA setups have come under a lot of scrutiny. Guys are doing a lot of complaining. That's not Brooks. because you got to go out and play. Maybe it's unfair, maybe it's not, but everyone's going to play. And in his mind, that's just one more thing that he can hold against the other players. And he feels like he probably has 10, 15 guys to beat. That's it.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. He's made that point before. He's done that math. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, Rory McIlroy came into the U.S. Open off that win in Canada. He shot a 68, Rex, yesterday. What was your sense as to how Rory was feeling about his round?
I picked Rory. Full disclosure this week, we had to do some picks, although I think I could have done a 1A, 1B, and 1C with him, Brooks, and DJ. And it's just coming off of a touchdown win last week in Canada. What he's done this year, 10 top 10 finishes and 13 starts, 2 victories. He has a U.S. Open. I think he's probably in the best place of everyone positioned now on the leaderboard. And I say that simply because he can do things that Justin Rose cannot over the course of the next 3 days. He can overpower a course if he wants. But as we've seen from Rory this season, he's not going to get overcome by the moment. He's not going to get ahead of himself. He's been very good this season about making sure that mentally he's as prepared as he always has been physically. And I think that's one of those elements that puts you over the top from being a good player to being a great player.
Hey, Rex, all true, but he has not won a major since 2014. How much do you think that weighs on him right now?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I mean, when you look at what he did, he won those 4 majors. I did the math the other day in about a 2.5-year stretch. And it was very, very similar to probably the conversation we're having now about Brooks, right? Where suddenly Brooks is on this run and you can imagine where this is going to end. And at the end of his career, how many could he possibly have? And it's dried up. As you pointed out, it's been 5 years since then. And I think anybody's going to think about that. But if anyone is mentally prepared enough to be okay with it, to move on. I mean, Rory has really camped on this idea of incremental gains. We saw it earlier this season in L.A. He probably should have won that event. He probably could have easily gotten frustrated, and he did not, because he's in this particular mindset that as long as I keep making improvements, eventually the wins will come. And they've come in big events, the players last week at the Canadian Open. They haven't come in the majors, but at this pace, it seems like it's just a matter of time for him.
All right, so Rex, what kind of a score are you expecting to see for the leaders on Sunday?
You have to believe, and we just had this long conversation about the USGA coming in this week with kid gloves. They don't want to push this over the edge. They need to make a good impression this week. But you have to believe that as the week goes on, the golf course is going to get more and more difficult. That being said, I don't think it'll be a normal U.S. Open Sunday. I don't think guys will be able to shoot even par, one over par, and still win. And a lot of factors come into play. The weather is going to impact that. If it stays cloudy, the golf course is just going to be soft. There's nothing you can do about it. And being a West Coast guy, it is amazing how good these greens are. I mean, everybody to a man who has played this event in the U.S. Open, who plays annually in the Pro-Am in February, says that they're as good as they've ever been. And that's simply going to set up for low scoring.
It's going to be really interesting. He is a senior writer for GolfChannel.com, and he is part of Golf Channel's Live from the U.S. Open news coverage on site from Pebble Beach this week. It airs before and after live tournament coverage. He is Rex number 7, Rex Hoggard. Rex, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Always good to have you on.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Me too. Rex, good job. All right, your thoughts on that? We are open. Open, and I've got another interview coming up next. I mentioned I would go back to back. Hayden Hurst is a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. That is next. 1 week out from the smack off. Last chance to get through. This Father's Day, you want to give dad a shirt from Untuck It. Trust me on that. You know, shirts that are specifically designed to be worn untucked. Untuck It shirts have that just right untucked length so dad can always look sharp and feel casual. Untuck It shirts are a go-to for any occasion from casual to dressy. Untuck It has more than 50 fit combinations, so tall, short, slim, and bigger dads can experience the perfect fitting shirt. Not only do they look good, they look amazing. They feel amazing. Even the wrinkle-free options. And if you're not exactly sure what Untuck It item to get dad, just go to untuckit.com, see all their great Father's Day gift ideas, and use the promo code ROME20 and get 20% off your first-time purchase. You can also visit Untuck It at one of their 60 retail stores. They're growing quickly. Get your perfect fit. Get it fast. Free shipping and returns on every order in the U.S. Untuckit.com. Remember that promo code ROME20. Get 20% off. Go to untuckit.com or hit one of their retail stores. Here is your sports update for hour number 1. Here is Andrew Bogish.
live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're efforting Ravens tight end Hayden Hurst. Remember, Friday is an ATP Ask the Pros Day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Submit a question there, and you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. Phone call is coming up a little bit later on, but we are joined right now by a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. He is entering his second season. He was a first-team All-SEC-er. He was the 25th pick overall in 2018 out of South Carolina. Baltimore is coming off a 10-6 season, and they open up against Miami on September 8th. That, of course, is a CBS game. Hayden Hurst is my guest. Hayden, good to have you back. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. Listen, let's talk about your offseason really quickly. I know you put on 20 pounds in the offseason, and you've been going through workouts. Your head coach, John Harbaugh, described you, quote, as a man on a mission. How has that offseason gone for you, and does that sound about right? Do you feel like you're a man on a mission?
Oh, absolutely. You know, with the injury last year, you know, it kind of set me back a little bit. I wasn't able to do what I'm capable of doing. So this offseason, the plan was to get back to what I was at South Carolina, and that was around 255, 260, and just so I could play a little bit faster and a little bit more physical. So absolutely, Harbs hit the nail on the head. I'm on a mission this year.
Hayden Hurst joining us. In terms of the injury, for those who do not know, you suffered a stress fracture in your foot. Like, how challenging was that for you to deal with? And then at the same time, what did you learn from the entire experience?
For me, it was really hard because this has been my first football injury ever. So, you know, having to take a step back off the field and just let it work its course and heal. I was never really 100% last year. You know, I had a screw in my foot the entire year, still there. But, you know, you kind of have those aches and pains. But, yeah, you know, it's definitely something I'm glad I went through. It's only going to make me stronger. It's only going to make me want, you know, more success on the field.
We're talking to Hayden Hurst. You know, in the final few games of the year, from the outside anyway, it seemed like you started to kind of find your rhythm. I know you're not looking to take a victory lap, but was there an element of pride for you in the way you came back and the fact that you were able to make an impact late?
I think so. That was huge for my confidence. I think the biggest thing for me is the more that I get in the rotation, the more that the coaches trust me, it's just going to help my confidence because it's going to let me know that I'm playing at a high level, which I know that I'm capable of, but I think me and Lamar started clicking towards the end, and hopefully, you know, it's just a sign of things to come.
Hayden Hurst is joining us. You mentioned Lamar. You and Lamar Jackson were part of that same draft class. Like, what do you make of the way he showed up last year, not only as a player, but as a leader?
Man, he's just so impressive the way he carries himself. I know he catches a lot of flack in the media about stuff, but he's such an incredible athlete. It's fun to watch him grow just every day. You know, he'll have one bad throw in a period, and the next period, he's incredible. I mean, he just bounces back from stuff. He's really fun to watch, and I'm just glad I'm his teammate.
You know, I wonder, what about the NFL? Is there something maybe that you know about the NFL and life in the league that maybe you did not know before your rookie season? Is it pretty much what you expected, or did you learn something about that going in?
For me, I think the difference between college football and the NFL is guys are just so much more on top of their stuff. There's not many busted assignments like you'll see in college where a side of the field will be completely vacated. You know, guys don't really mess up, you know, because it's life or death out there. You know, they're trying to make money and provide for their families. So there's not really a lot of busted coverages or missed assignments, and you really have to be on top of the playbook and know your stuff.
And once they start paying you, things change. Hayden Hurst is joining us. You know, I know you're on your grind, you're on your mission, but during the offseason, were you able to get away a little bit? As an example, did I see you posting on Instagram that you made it out here to California? Where did you go and how did that go for you?
Yeah, I was able to kind of get away from football for a little bit and meet up with some old baseball buddies out there. I went to San Diego for a little bit, then met up with some friends in Newport Beach, stayed at Pelican Hill. So it was cool. You know, it gave me a different perspective of the West Coast. It's beautiful out there. I love it. The weather's great. I think the biggest thing was it was just huge for me to decompress and get away from the season a little bit and meet up with some old buddies.
Now we're talking. All right, so I know these spots really, really well. Tell me about Pelican. Did you play any golf out there? Did you find your way to Javier's down the street?
We did not. We went over to Laguna Beach a little bit and walked around. Went up to a few restaurants, but man, it is something else out there. It's a whole new world, and it is just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, no, that's a great property, and Laguna's great too. Did you get some sun, or was it fogged in, socked in?
No, we got a lot of sun. We had a resort there at Pelican Hill. We were able to kind of go by the pool and hang out and go to Laguna Beach a little bit and walk around. I think we decided it's going to be an annual thing, so me and my buddies are going to meet up there next year in January.
Got to. Got to. Did you hit that giant round pool at Pelican?
Yes, absolutely. That's where we were sitting.
Hayden Hurst joining us. All right, one more thing, too. Last month, you had a tweet that went viral. The tweet was, quote, "To the gorgeous tall brunette on my flight to Baltimore, you walk incredibly fast. I couldn't catch up, but here's hoping you have Twitter, hashtag the one that got away." How surprised were you that that tweet went viral?
I mean, wow. I told my sister, I tweeted it out as a joke. I mean, I saw this girl, and I tossed this tweet out at the airport, you know, just laughing around, joking. And the next thing I know, it's on Fox News. And, man, that tweet took a life of its own. And it just kind of cracks me up because, obviously, you can tell it's the off season, you know.
Dude, what a world, man. Welcome to 2019. Now, did you ever hear back?
Nothing yet. I heard back from Spirit Airlines, and everybody's on the lookout. But, you know, I'll keep everybody posted, but nothing back yet.
Hayden Hurst is joining us. Listen, you and I talked last year, and we talked about your journey and some of the challenges along the way. Last month, you spent time visiting schools, and you were talking to students about mental health. Why was that something that you wanted to talk to kids about?
Well, for me and my family, it's something that kind of hits home with us. In 2006, my uncle took his life. And 2 years later, his son took his life. So mental health and suicide prevention is something that hits really home with the Hurst family. I struggled with my own issues, you know, my 3 years in professional baseball after high school. So it's something that we really want, you know, to continue the discussion on. It's a topic that not many people enjoy talking about. You know, you kind of mention mental health to people and they get, you know, a little weird about it. But, you know, it's something that I'm not afraid to talk about. It's what has made me and shaped me into who I am. So, you know, if I can continue the conversation and bring light to it, you know, that's the goal.
You know, I appreciate that and I respect that so much. Hayden Hurst is my guest. What do you think it means for a kid to see a big football player standing in front of them talking about mental health? And what are you hoping they'll take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of my whole, you know, conversation when I talk to these kids. If they can see, you know, this big NFL tight end, you know, football player, hey, he has mental health issues too, and that's something that I can relate to. You know, I can seek help if he can. And I think that's the biggest message I try to get across to these kids is just ask for help. You know, it's perceived as a weakness right now, but it's absolutely not. You know, it was the best thing I ever did for myself to reach out for help. I was able to kind of change my life and take me down this path where I'm at now.
We're talking to Hayden Hurst. You know, I wonder, one of your messages is just that it's okay to not be okay. It sounds really simple, but what was the process like for you to learn that?
Oh, wow. It took me about 3 or 4 years, you know, to finally reach out and seek help. But I think the biggest thing is when it starts affecting your social life and the person who God intended you to be, that's when you need to seek help and you need to ask for help and reach out for somebody. For me, it was my family. They've always been my support system forever and ever, and they always will be. But just if you start feeling off or anything like that, just reach out for help because there's so many people out there that want to help you.
See, and the thing is, I've got two teenage sons, and we talk about this all the time as a family. You really don't know what these kids are dealing with. Let me finally ask you, like, what would you say to somebody right now who is dealing with their mental health and they're feeling like they're all alone and they really don't know where to turn or what to do?
Well, first things first, you're not alone. Everybody battles through their own issues. You know, everybody fights their own fight. And I don't think when you're in that, you do feel alone and you don't feel like there's anyone there for you. Because trust me, I know that feeling. I've been through it. And by no means does this mean that I'm over it. It's something that I deal with to this day. But I've definitely had different methods to kind of help me with it and get through it. Again, my family, through journaling. But I promise you, there's people out there that care about you and genuinely want to help and see you succeed.
He is entering his second season. He is a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. He was a first-team All-SEC-er. Baltimore coming off a 10-6 season. He's a man on a mission. Hayden Hurst, my guest. Hayden, really good to have you back. Appreciate that conversation a lot, man. Great talking to you.
Yes, sir, Mr. Realm. Thank you so much.
Great talking to you, sincerely. Seriously. And he is so interesting. And so much to like about that conversation. Mental health is very much an issue. And, hey, what's up, big head? The flight deck's in the house. Dude, why did you walk in, like, slowly, take a look around? You're looking for the camera, huh? Because you're big head. James Kelly. Does not get any better than that guy. Nor is there a head in the world that gets any bigger. My man is so good. I was mentioning mental health is becoming more and more of an issue publicly, and the narrative and the dialogue, and it's so important, especially among athletes, because for so long this was not something that could be discussed. Like, nobody wanted to hear that, and nobody wanted to bring it up. And for him to say point blank, it's been an issue. It's been an issue in my family. It's been an issue for me. And I dealt with it in Major League Baseball, or as a baseball player. We didn't get into that, but when we had him on last year, we talked about this with him. He did play baseball, and essentially, in effect, he got the yips. He got the yips. This was a guy who threw in the 90s, and he was in the Pirates system, and then all of a sudden, he just could not throw strikes. So that's what he was referencing. So I really applaud that he is that upfront about that. Not only upfront about it and acknowledges it, but goes to schools, talks to kids, and says, look, it's okay not to be okay, and you're not alone. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so two interviews now are number one. We are wide open. The Raptors are the world champs, and I want to talk more about that. I want to talk about the fact that Golden State, man, they took every shot. Nothing went their way, and they just kept battling. They kept grinding. I've got thoughts on that, too. No, we're not going to hang an asterisk on the Raptors. Some guy that I know that I kind of like, that I kind of respect a little bit, was like, dude, you know what you should do? You should just tweet an asterisk. Just tweet an asterisk and nothing else. Yeah, that's a really good idea. I'll do that. Y'all get right on that. Dear Pimp, now that we have brought a championship to Canada, we feel Tyler or Matt could do the same. We'll be cheering for Brad's cell service to drop and for Left to lose his voice. Sign the Raptors. This is what I'm saying. We're not hanging an asterisk on this. I mean, you have to acknowledge it. You have to acknowledge that they lost two Hall of Famers, but that's part of it. In fact, I'm going to need time to lay that whole thought out. This guy writes, War Clay, still shooting 60% from his hospital bed. Jeff from the 919. This is what I hate about that whole rap about all of us out here in Cali. Man, you're all soft. You're all laid back. You're all flakes. Look at Clay, just a laid back SoCal. Clay. When he wants to reset himself, he jumps in the Pacific. Yeah, when he wants to reset himself. Let me tell you about that guy. He shredded his knee. Was he going to jump in the Pacific with a shredded knee and then come back? He didn't even need to reset himself. The guy left the floor, was in the tunnel, was told if you don't shoot those throws, you can't re-enter the game. Came back, not only shot them, made them, and then headed back up the floor. And told Steve Kerr, just give me a couple of minutes, and I'll go back out. On a shredded knee. Laid back my ass. These guys are tough. All of them. Hey, Rome. Happy Flag Day. What's your favorite flag? Mine is the Tennessee Volunteers orange and white checkered flag because it reminds me of my own smile. Regards, Cablin Asian. Vadi in Pasadena. Hey, Vadi, I really don't want to take the time to have to decode your emails. Something you trying to say, Vadi? Rome, we're trading in our hockey gear for denim-laced Raptors jerseys after realizing that we are terrible at our national pastime. Signed, Fair-Weathered Canadians. Matt in Tucson. You can't take this from them as much as you'd like to. They are the world champs. The Raptors are the world champs, and they earned it. When we come back, an open segment. 1-800-636-8686. Stay tuned.